and welcome to the Feminem Podcast, the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Dara Cass, editor-in-chief of Feminem.
And I'm Jenny Beck Esme, the other editor-in-chief of Feminem. Today, we are joined by Dr. Allison Haddock. She's an assistant professor at Baylor College of Medicine and past chair of the ASEP State Legislative Committee, involved in state-level advocacy in the state of Washington previously and currently in Texas through TSEP and the TMA. So, Allison, we were hanging out recently at CORD with all the movers and shakers in emergency medicine, medical education, and you and I got to talking about how things have been going for you and from a policy and legislative perspective. And this seems especially timely as literally today, while we're at CORD, there's a special election for a House seat in Arizona, and one of the candidates is a feminem, an emergency physician, Dr. Hiral Tippernenny. Now, one of the things you mentioned to me was wanting to see more emergency physicians, and particularly women, getting involved at the state level in policy and legislation, since that's where a lot of the interesting things seem to be happening. So can you give us some updates on that or some examples?
Absolutely. So Hiral's race is a national race, and I think those races are super important, and they get a lot of press and publicity that's easy for all of us to see. But there's a lot going on in every individual state that's important for our practice. So one thing that we've seen that's been a state-by-state issue is Medicaid expansion, and there's still 18 states that haven't expanded Medicaid. And in those states, there's tons of opportunities for emergency physicians to get involved with the advocacy groups that are advocating to expand Medicaid. We're also seeing a lot of issues around opioids, and so having emergency physicians involved, trying to figure out what we can do to help with the opioid epidemic, but also communicate that emergency physicians aren't, you know, the root of all of our opioid epidemic problems in America is super important. And the more gridlocked we see things getting in DC, the more important it is for people to be involved on a state level.
So I think that one of the things I want to do is kind of take this back to the beginning, right? So for those of you that weren't at Fix 17 and didn't see the Fix podcast or post that we put afterwards, you, Allison, actually gave a talk at Fix on advocacy and being a physician. And I think that one of the things that's really important to kind of review is the place that we see physicians holding in advocacy, especially as it relates to healthcare, but even other things like we had the hashtag online, the Docs for Gun Sense, or other opportunities to talk about the opioid crisis or advice on things like maternal mortality, right? So there's so many policy opportunities that start local and then grow to be state and national issues. And the question first now becomes, you know, the space for physicians and in our world, emergency physicians being more active. So I think one of the things that's easy to do is to go back to the beginning a little bit for you and talk a little bit about what you did growing up to make you feel like advocacy was something you wanted to do and like things, lessons learned along the way. So you think you can go walk us through the history of Dr. Haddock?
Sure, I can do that. So one of the things that happened very early in my career is when I was in medical school, I got involved with the AMA and I did an internship for my congressman, Congressman Jim McDermott. And he was a physician and a huge advocate for figuring out a way to get universal health care. And to link that in with our sort of state involvement theme today, while he was my national congressman, his proposal was that we figure out a way to give states just a chunk of money and that they could do whatever they wanted to figure out how to get universal coverage in their state. And that's something that while Dr. McDermott is no longer a congressman, we're still seeing going on in states. There was a ballot initiative for universal coverage in Colorado last year. There's been a introduced legislation in California. And that's a place where, you know, physicians are really looked to as experts. And we need to be, you know, involved in trying to make sure that we're pushing forward systems that are going to work for us and provide better access and coverage for our patients.
And then you did a, so your hashtag, your Twitter handle is AdvocacyMD, right? So this isn't just something that you do fly by the seat of your pants, and not everybody out there is going to know as much about policy as you do. So can you kind of talk a little bit about what you've done in policy along the way that landed you on the ASAP board of directors? Congratulations, by the way. But more importantly, like, what did you do when you were resident? What did you do as a young attending? Any other formal additional education that you had in policy and education that could make people who might not be, want to be more empowered and educated to do that?
So I don't have an MPH. I don't have a master's in policy. I don't have a ton of formal education. I think one thing that's important to remember is that as a physician, you're looked at as a healthcare expert by your patients and by those who surround you, the people who are your congressperson's constituents. So your viewpoint as someone who's just on the front line seeing patients is respected. I got to put in a plug for the EMRA Advocacy Handbook here. It's a great book that I'm the co-editor of that really goes through a lot of the biggest issues that we're dealing with in healthcare today and can provide a primer. We didn't have Twitter we had it. It wasn't as big then as it is now. There's a lot of great health policy debate on Twitter. So if you get on there and start following some of the key people, you'll be in tune on some of the major issues and have the opportunity to get yourself the background you need.
Can you tell us the key people that we should be following?
So Chu EK, of course, Esther Chu is a big policy person.
Wait, so Chu EK, at Chu EK?
Yeah, there we go.
I've heard of that girl.
Yes, we may have heard of her around here. And some great folks to follow are the healthcare writers. So following Sarah Cliff, who writes about healthcare for Vox, following Dan Diamond, Andy Slavitt is a big voice in that space. Those are some good folks to start with. Follow me at AdvocacyMD. Follow Cedric Dark, who does the Policy Prescriptions blog. There's some great emergency physician policy folks out there that you can start getting some info from.
Following people on Twitter, getting some education through the EMRA handbook, are there any other ways or organizations that you think that people should be looking into to get themselves involved?
I would recommend getting involved with your state level committees on issues. So you're looking at your state AMA chapter and your state ASEP chapter. So most state ASEP chapters have some kind of government relations or legislative committee of some sort. And they're generally always looking for new blood, new volunteers who are willing to dig deep in these issues and learn more. So if you get on their email lists, you'll start seeing the conversation. You don't have to be leading the charge right away. You can see what the big issues are for emergency physicians, and it'll give you an opportunity to get going.
I also think that that's actually a plug for not just your local medical organizations, but also your local organizations, whatever they may be. So in your neighborhood, right, knowing your city council and knowing what's going on there. And what's interesting to me is watching some of these physicians who are running for office currently, and I think that'll be our next thing to talk about. The experience that they've had on their local level, only in their physician groups, right? So understanding maybe we have insight into education also. So maybe being on your school board or also thinking about your local city elections and council opportunities as well. And being a physician, while maybe getting involved in that, brings in sort of insight into that board that maybe they wouldn't have.
I mean, one of the things that Allison was saying earlier to me kind of offline or off podcast was that it's easier to get involved at the state level or at the local level because it's A, less intimidating. These are your neighbors and they're closer to you. B, it's less expensive. So one of the ways to get FaceTime with people is going to their fundraisers. Well, you know, junior attendings or residents probably don't have the funds to be paying to, you know, sit with presidential candidates or even statewide national level candidates. But local candidates, we can pay the $50 that they want to have dinner and then get FaceTime and say, I'm an expert on X, Y, or Z, believe it or not, and I have something to say about it. What do you think?
And the local representatives' constituencies are small enough that you don't necessarily have to pay anything to go to their events. They'll be having local events that are just town halls and things that are open to the public. I mean, I encourage you to identify someone who you think is going to support healthcare issues and patient access and physician-friendly issues and really get behind them because that is the way to kind of take it to the next level. But there are definitely local opportunities that are much more open and they don't require travel. I mean, it's hard to travel to D.C. all the time. To even to your state capital might not be real close to you, but there is a representative and a senator in your district that would love to meet with you.
So back to the idea of now women physicians, but physicians running for office, but obviously we're partial to the idea of more women physicians running for office.
Absolutely.
There is a onslaught of, I think, coming. This is your warning of women physicians running for office for the first time, right? There are currently how many? I can't count on one hand how many women congresswomen there are who are doctors. Allison, can you count for me before the election outcome for today, whatever the outcome will be, what was the number of women congresswomen who were doctors?
That would be zero nationally, Dara.
And what's the number of women senators, Allison, who are doctors?
That would be zero as well, yes.
Right. So that is the number we're trying to change. And I think that that's not, you know, talking about state and local advocacy. And then as things grow, it's a great way to get experience. There's actually another physician I was telling you guys about before, who's actually a hand surgeon, who has taken it as her mission in life after her after the election 2016, for whatever that's worth, to support women running for office, specifically women physicians. And she actually started a whole website called RunMD Run. And it's about the idea of amplifying the voice of women physicians running for office. And I think that one of the other things we can think about is supporting our peers and our like compatriots as they decide to take steps like this. Because, you know, one of the things that Feminem is, I think, particularly good at, but one of our missions is to say, I may not be able to be the person who's going to get on stage and speak right now. I may need that later, but I'm going to support you and I'm going to amplify what you're doing. So is there any suggestions you would give for somebody that may not want to run for office right now, but wants to amplify or support an advocacy effort other physicians may be doing? Like, I mean, I think donating is one thing. Any other ideas that you can think of about how to empower somebody else to do it if you can't yourself?
I think trying to identify the people locally who are doing things that you support is the key. So might be a physician woman. It might not be, depending on where you live and what the climate is around you. But there's probably some women involved in a cause that you support. So that's where, like, a nonprofit trying to work on Medicaid expansion or a nonprofit trying to support your local free health clinics. That can be a stepping stone, too. The networking that you accomplish there locally, that's the kind of networking you would need to do if you did end up wanting to run for office someday. And you'll get experience too. It was interesting for me when Nathan Schlicker locally ran for Congress in Washington. I was able to get experience with him seeing how a campaign really works. And that, you know, helps me the next time I want to support somebody.
So then what do we do about politics versus professionalism, right? And I think that this is something that we've talked about a lot offline. I gave a talk and I gave a little plug, and, you know, I was plugged for a fellow physician, really. I think that there becomes like a bipartisan effort to get more physicians into Congress. And I think that if we could actually accept that as a great way to increase the presence of physician voices, I think that would be a first step towards supporting a lot of different voices. But if you're going to be vocal on a position, let's say that it is Medicare expansion or opioid, like supports for opiates, and, you know, then you find out that your employer isn't necessarily a huge fan of that, or you're afraid that you're going to have repercussions in your professional environment. How do people draw the line, or is there a line even, between your professional and your personal vocal advocacy? Donations, is there any risk to being a vocal advocate for policy?
I think there's always some risk, but I don't think on a lot of these healthcare issues that the risk is giant. Just because the hospital you're working for isn't specifically looking to expand their substance abuse resources doesn't mean that they'll necessarily oppose you working to expand substance abuse resources in the community. The thing I would watch out for is sort of the social media aspect of it. If you say on your Twitter profile that you work at X location and then you get really vocal about things, you might run into trouble, especially if it's something that's even more of a political hot button issue than the example I just gave. But I don't think it's I think we worry about it sometimes more than it is an actual risk. I don't think many of our employers are sort of looking to get people out of politics. I think, you know, the hospitals are wanting to build those relationships too. So it could potentially be to their advantage in the future if you get to know your congressperson and they need to lobby them for something good for the hospital and good for you.
Jenny, what do you think? I mean, I think we think about this a lot as we take stands.
I think about this all the time because my personal social media presence is almost twofold in that I have a med ed content based expanding the understanding of emergency medicine as a medical practice, half of what I do on social media. And then I have a very politically charged kind of other half of what I do that is medical advocacy, but also a lot of women's rights, women's equality issues that happen to land in our country in the political realm. How does this dichotomy play? And is my medical education stuff going to be impacted by my political stuff? And then also, this is all very public. And so any patient of mine who lands in, you know, Bay 12 and is just Googling their physician while they're waiting for their lab results is going to pull up my Twitter feed and potentially and see all this stuff. Now, has this ever happened? No, but it could, and it could potentially lead to some interesting moments in the ER. So I think about it a lot. I don't know what the right answer is, but I think I know that for me, I don't know that I can do it any other way right now, at least. What do you think, Dara?
I think it's hard. I think that, you know, when I think about my beliefs, which are generally rooted in trying to do the right thing for people. And a lot of that isn't always popular because everybody has their different perception of what the right thing for people is. And I, you know, and I think that for me, and this goes, it is a little far from being an advocacy policy thing, but it's about like the idea of reproductive rights. So like, you know, I fundamentally believe that there's a correlation between the access to reproductive autonomy and gender equity. And so there becomes a blurred line. And it isn't to say that I'm not telling people what choice to make. I'm saying the opportunity of choice is, in my perspective, very tied into the opportunity for gender equity. And as somebody that advocates for gender equity, I also advocate for access to choice. And I feel like that's the right way for me to be. And I know people don't agree with that necessarily. And that's, I respect those opinions floridly. One of the things I try to not do is be disrespectful on social media, because I'm actually not disrespectful of anyone's political beliefs. I believe that people have very deeply held political beliefs because they think it's the right thing to do. I don't think people come into a conversation trying to be a bad person. I don't think doctors come to a shift trying to be a bad doctor. And I think that we forget that sometimes. So I try to respect that if I'm going to come to something with an advocacy position, it's going to generally be rooted in one of my fundamental, deeply held beliefs, which is to try to take really good care of patients, to try to have, you know, equity across the board, to advocate for people in places that are mostly unable to advocate for themselves. And that goes back to things like racial disparities and criminal justice reform and all these other places that, as doctors, especially as emergency doctors, we see the most raw perspective of American reality on a daily basis, right? We work in hospitals where people who are incarcerated come through on a regular basis, and we see who's getting arrested every Saturday night for different crimes. And so we get to understand the real kind of on the boots issues and on the ground issues. And I think that goes back to getting involved in your local government. Like when you're in your town's ER on Saturday nights, is that a buzzer? We're almost done. You know, then you get to see what's happening with healthcare and with, you know, criminal justice stuff and with the opioid crisis and with, you know, all this stuff. You are a frontline witness. So maybe that's why there's nobody better to be an advocate. Al, what do you think?
I think that's absolutely the argument that I would make. And people trust physicians. People trust us way more than they trust lawyers, which is who's predominating in politics. They trust us more than they trust politicians. And as emergency physicians, we really see all aspects of society. You know, if you're working in a clinic, that clinic is in one neighborhood or another neighborhood, accepts one kind of insurance or not another kind of insurance, and you're going to see a more specific slice of American society. But in emergency medicine, we truly see all slices of American society. And I think that that's an important point for anyone who wants to get more involved in politics and policy, to be able to demonstrate that, you know, they see the world in their job every day.
I love that. I think that's a great place to wrap up. What do you think, Dara?
So I think this is an opportunity, I think, for a call to action for us to say to everybody out there, you know, when you see an issue in your department and you think there's something that needs to be addressed, find out what your local chapter's position is. Find out what your local legislature's position is. See if you can help them understand have a better understanding of the issue, and then see where it takes you. I mean, we're not expecting everyone to quit their jobs and run for office, but if you are running for office, let us know. We definitely want to amplify what you're doing. Allison is glowing with pride right now, I think. She's like, this is her mission, is to have a call to action for all of you out there to get involved in something. It can literally be a bake sale for naloxone delivery systems in your local department. It can be that simple. But we need to do something. We can't just stop. We can't just sit back and wait for somebody else to do it. It's literally our time. Right, Al?
Absolutely. And it's a burnout intervention. You will find your work more satisfying if you know that you're taking action to make the environment a better place for your patients, to make your part of the world a better place. I know there's nothing more satisfying in my career than my advocacy work. And I just think it's so important. And the more folks who get involved, the bigger difference we can make.
All right, let's all do it. Actually, I do want to say one more thing. Not just running for office. If you're doing anything, if you're running for your local ASAP chapter or anything like that, also let us know, because obviously we want to know about people running for Congress, but we want to know about the feminems out there that are running for any of these things, so we can see what we can do to support your path.
Your advocate. So thank you, Allison Haddock at Advocacy MD. And that other girl at Chew MD, Chew EK, I heard. And I'll look her up and I'll find out who she is. And then we will have you back another time to talk about this. And whatever happens with the election tonight, at least we know that at least one feminine ran for national office. Woohoo. All right. Thank you, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.